Hello and welcome to Occupational Therapy Conversations. In this episode, I have my guest, Kim, and we explored a case of a person who has diabetes, and we explored on the things that we can be doing as an occupational therapist. I hope you enjoyed the show.
All right, welcome once again, and we are into OT Conversations, and this is how, and we are with our very frequent visitor, Kim. All right, hello, Kim, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
You're doing okay?
Yeah.
All right, so we are going to talk about something today. What would you like to talk about?
Functional assessments, then diabetes. Well, I want to kind of know OT inputs with diabetes patients.
With diabetes?
Patient type 2, yeah.
Okay.
I'll ask the question like what I would like to know.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want to start asking then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I just want to know, like, if you need to do an assessment for diabetes patients, the kind of assessment tool OT we normally kind of use for that, because I found that, like, you can use CMOP,
Canadian Model of Occupational Performance,
to get information on ADLs and functional, to do like functional. So I just want to know, because it's a little bit, I couldn't like kind of get a lot of information what assessment to the kind of use.
What kind of assessment is required?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, your assessment as an occupational therapist will always have to be based on occupation. And occupation is, like we said, there are areas of occupation, ADL, work, and leisure. It depends on where you are. Are you in the hospital?
In the hospital.
So you won't be in the community?
No.
No. So you're in the hospital.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's the same basic requirement that you needed to do. So have an established information about who this person is. We need to establish who the person is. What is, who are they? Do they?
The person has been managing well at home, but they've got ulcer plantar on their foot. They use Rolato frame, but the person has missed his appointment to go and see ophthalmology.
Right.
So the person has been brought in into the hospital, struggling with his personal care and refusing nurses to help.
I see.
To help on the hospital ward and depressed as well.
Okay.
So feel like there's something cognitively going on, because from my own point of view, if he's missed his appointment twice to go and see ophthalmology, and he's depressed as well, and he's refusing care. The person used to be a bus driver, but not working at the moment due to ongoing health issues going on with him. So if I was to go and do like an assessment with that person, I think as an OT student, what I'll do is like what we normally do, screen the notes, gather like information first, then go to the patient to do my own initial assessment. So what I'm going to do is I'll ask what kind of environment they live in and how they've been coping before coming into the hospital. So, and from what I can gather from, this person has always been independent.
The person was independent?
Yeah, before coming to the hospital. So now, if he's refusing to have help from carers, so how is he been doing his own personal care at the hospital? So I would like to do like ADL person, like an assessment, just to see how he's been doing it by himself since he's been refusing and how he's been dressing up. So from there, I'll be able to assess maybe if he's doing it. I'm just imagining like I'm assessing the patient. So if the patient is doing personal care and I'll see what he's struggling with, maybe upper body or lower body. So if this person is kind of, I think most people struggle with lower body. So I might kind of advise him on how to do his lower body. And maybe that's when thing is going to come in. What's it called?
Like a long-handled breacher.
Yeah, putting on his trouser. And if he can still stand, that means he can actually stand to do the lower the lower parts, like for a few minutes and stuff like that. But I think what I just want to know is what assessment tool that I can use. So
assessment tool,
yeah, for a diabetic.
I see. Well, if you want to do well, first, like an occupational therapy assessment, first and foremost, is there's no international tool that describes it, okay, in terms of their ADLs. So you would have to have that initial interview, like what you said, establish who the person is, what does the person do, do they live alone? The same as what you would encounter here.
Encounter,
so have an established first, who is this person? Well, you know, do they live alone? Were they independent prior to this? What's the home situation is. So you need to know who the person is. That is the first part of the assessment. The next thing, yeah, you need to establish how they were prior to being in the hospital. Yeah. So I would assume that this person was independent.
Was independent.
Prior to this. Yeah. And then now in the hospital, the person is now in the hospital. Okay. And then the next thing you need to do is, how are you now? Are you still able to do the things that you were doing? And based on one of the tool that you can use is what we're using here, which is the CARE measure. It's the Cambridge ADL and Rehab measure. You know, because it compares the baseline abilities and to the current abilities, isn't it? It tells you before you were independent, now you're not independent. With bed, with chair, it's the same. With toilet, it's the same. So that's one way you can quantify it, yeah? There are other tools out there like functional independence measure, FIM, which is FIM-FAM. There's one. Another one would be the Barthel. These are all ADL measures that's there. There is CATS Index. It's called K-A-T-Z, CATS Index. So these are some of the areas. Now, the other one is you can use COPM, Canadian Occupational Performance Measure. But you need to have
evidence.
You need to have access to the tool. And in that, COPM is you assess the areas on, you know, you get the person to identify areas that they have problems with, and then you get them to score what's their performance in a scale of 1 to 10, or put a score in terms of how important they are.
Yeah.
You know, 1 to 10, 10 being important, 0 is not important. That way, if they're able to prioritize the ADL problems, like, for example, you know, I can't get out of bed, I can't wash, I can't do anything. So they can't, he's writing those things down. And then you ask them, which ones do you think is most important to you? So by them prioritizing, then you can use that as your way to prioritize your input, because the patient themselves are the ones that prioritized it. Then the next thing is you ask, what's your performance score in terms of 1 to 10? 10 being very good and 0 not good at all. You know, so they put a score. Another one would be, what's your safety score? You know, 10 being very safe and 0 not safe. And what is your, for every aspect that you assess, that they say, every problem. And then the next thing is, how satisfied are you with how you were doing it? 10 to 1. And then, once you've initially done that, establish that with a person, you do your session, the ramps, you know, if you remember that, your restore, your alter, modify, prevent, you do your intervention. And before they go home, you ask again, what is the what's your score now? So the person can tell, so from 1 to 10, and then you can compare the difference. If, for example, prior to having the session, I was my performance score was 2 based on what he feels, and then now before I go home, I feel my performance score is 7. So you can see that there is progress. Yeah. So that's one way of doing that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that is the main concern, because diabetes alone shouldn't stop a person from doing the day-to-day things.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Apart from the ADLs, the cognitive, because this person is depressed.
Uh-huh.
So probably do like 480 test to know, like cognitive test to find out, because if he has missed his appointment twice, that means, and is depressed, like people depressed, mainly it has to do with psychological.
Is it mood? Is it depression? I mean, normally.
Low in mood.
Low in mood. Normally, diabetes shouldn't have an effect on your thinking. You know? It shouldn't, normally. You know, blood sugar, high blood sugar, low blood sugar. But, you know, a person can be diabetic, but normally it shouldn't be a problem.
Some people get confused, though. Maybe when their blood sugar is low.
And they're living alone.
Yeah.
They're living alone. So maybe the diabetes is not controlled.
It's not controlled, yeah.
Okay, so you need to make sure that... And who's going to control this sugar level?
We need to... That's what I'm thinking, like, as an OT... You can work with diabetics nurse, which they can actually teach him on how to control his blood test. I'm sorry, blood sugar.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Is he insulin dependent or non insulin dependent?
Non-insulin
dependent. So it can normally be controlled by medication.
So we can actually, as an OT, we can actually set up like a reminder for him. To kind of remind him to take his medication. Yeah. So is it that we use like an alarm, which you can use like...
Alarm
to do that.
Use the phone,
yeah.
Yeah.
And some people have got this, is it Dosset, whatever.
Dosset box?
Yeah, Dosset box, like so that it will be easy for him and knows the days, like put the days on, like...
Mm-hmm.
What days?
So the issue here is medication routine.
Medication routine.
In terms of your ADLs, medication routine, missing out medication. You want him not to miss out the medication. How are you going to do that? You will be using modify technique. Modify approach, which is use a...
Alarm.
Alarm, or you use Dosset boxes.
Boxes.
That's modify intervention,
yeah,
isn't it? That's why. So that's medication routine, ability to maintain their medication. What about the ability to maintain appointments? This is now in the community.
We can actually refer him.
To?
We can refer him back. That's the, yeah. If it's OT community, but OT community... They don't really deal with that.
Who's going to do it?
So we can refer him back to diabetics.
And nurses service?
Nurses, maybe, yeah, nursing thing in the community. Is it? Do they call them district nurses or something?
Probably.
Yeah.
If it's a service that they do, why not? If there is a service out there that monitors, hey, you need to be here, you need to be reminded. Usually GP appointments will contact the person. And then they do that. Normally, you know, different services have done that. So if there is a way that that's doable, then yeah, that's fine. And what kind of intervention would that be?
I think the intervention is...
In terms of the ramps.
Ramps. The intervention is not going to be restorative.
No.
And it's not...
It's not modified.
It's not modified. And restorative. No. What's the other one?
The last bit.
Rams.
Prevent.
It's not prevent.
Well, eventually, depending on how you write it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on how you write it down. How are you going to prevent him from missing? Yeah. So you can write it down. Patient will be able to maintain. But what are you going to do? You're going to refer.
Yeah, I'm going to refer him.
And that referral is support intervention.
Support intervention.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And you can justify it. You know, you're supporting, providing that support. The referral, the act of referring, it means that you are enhancing the context. You are making opportunities for him. If you want that, then that's a support intervention. But you can write that down based on your documentation and say, I'm providing referral to prevent him from missing out. Then that becomes a prevent intervention.
Prevent intervention, yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Your treatment depends on your reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
But equally, that it's the same, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Depends on how you justify. It's not like paracetamol. You know, a paracetamol, you give somebody a paracetamol and then somebody, it will address the temperature problems. Yeah. Whereas with OT intervention, it depends on your goal. You know, so one treatment can be preventative, but it can also be supportive.
Supportive.
Depending on your reasons, which is always good.
Yeah.
That's why I always say, you know, anything we do as OT matters and always has an outcome. Okay. So that's that. But he's missing these out. It looks like there's an element of self-neglect.
Yeah. If there's self-neglect, we can actually involve a social worker to kind of know what is maybe any... self-neglect. We can actually involve a social worker to work with him because they kind of deal with stuff like that.
Somebody coming in. To check up on him.
So we can work with social worker. And in terms of mobilizing, he's got steps in the house. I know in hospital, he can actually do like, the physio can do like steps with him.
So restorative practice.
Yeah. So they can do steps with him.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully he will be able to kind of, you know, because his flat, he's got steps in the flat that he needs to access. Mm. So with that, if he's practicing, so from there, he will be able to do steps when he gets some.
Okay.
And he uses a rollator frame. So I think basically as an OT, what we just need to kind of work on is ADLs. How is he going to manage with some other stuff like cooking and everything when he gets some?
How's he eating?
Before he... Before getting to the hospital, he made his meals
okay
by himself. So I wish he can actually do that,
uh-huh.
yeah, independently.
Uh-huh.
So no concerns. I think the most thing is just more of his more of like what you said, the social work thing.
Yeah, supportive. If he's not able to do it,
yeah,
okay. Do you know one thing that we're probably missing here? The first thing before you do anything with the patient is to really work and collaborate with the patient. Because as occupational therapists, couldn't solve the problems unless the problems are actually identified by the patient. If he's missing out these appointments, if he's not looking after himself, you have to ask him why. Does he see this as a problem? Are you willfully missing it? Or do you not want to do it?
I'm thinking, yeah, because we need to work together.
Mm.
It needs to be person-centered.
Exactly. It has to be him who needs to be in control of this. So as an occupational therapist, your assessment, yes, you've established what he was doing. You've established the home. You've established the pattern. But there is a problem. The problem is you're missing these things out. And we want to identify... Is this by chance that you're really missing it out? Or are you willfully not motivated to do this?
That's what I want to say. Maybe because he's depressed, low in mood. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe if he is low in mood.
Then the model that you are tapping on is model of human occupation, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where a person's drive starts with volition, values, interest, and personal causation.
Causation.
Have you come across the model of human occupation?
Volition,
So volition, under that, is his values, his interest, and his personal causation. And I know that everybody has to have that, you know, to be able to function properly. You need to have that drive. And in parallel, the Canadian model of occupational performance, that would be the spirituality.
Yeah, that's what I want to say.
Isn't it? Yeah. That's the spirituality. But they just clumped it all together to spirituality in the CMOP. But in fact, the MOHO, which is the older version, you know, the version really is what's the spirituality parallel to spirituality is his volition, his interest, and his personal causation. So you need to tap on that with him. You know, are you okay? What's happening? What's getting you down? You know, sometimes if you come across with somebody who is bombarded with conditions, you just don't want to do anything, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you want to give up, you know, it's like, oh my God, I feel so good. Obviously, there is a factor in which if your sugar is high or low, you just feel it. And you just would not be motivated to do anything.
Anything.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And it will, you not moving will, you not showering, a person who's, you know, confined at home, not getting any sunlight, you just don't want to do anything. So that's an element where occupational therapy intervention can come in, because you've picked up there are problems. Now you want to find out what, and that's emotional assessment, that psychosocial assessment.
Yeah, you know what just came to my head?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about, I was thinking kitchen assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I actually talk about kitchen assessments is if anything is wrong with his eyesight, mm-hmm. in case they might struggle to prepare meals.
Mm-hmm.
So since he has missed his ophthalmology appointment twice, so if I do kitchen assessments, I'll be able to see if he's finding it difficult to take things, maybe cups, kettle,
mm-hmm.
like that we're able to tell like there's mm-hmm. something definitely wrong
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
with his eyesight. Yeah. Like
the thing about this eyesight now, yes, kitchen assessment, you do that, you only if he identifies it to be a problem.
Okay.
If he says, it's like, I'm having problems preparing my meals, then let's look at this. Because sometimes you're not eating, you're not preparing meals. What's wrong? Well, I can't be bothered.
I can't be bothered.
So that's a different reason. And then, okay, well, you need to eat. What are you going to do about it? Oh, I'm just having ready-made meals. Then that's it's not a problem, isn't it? That's a compensatory strategy that he's actually decided to act on.
Okay.
You know, he's like, well, I don't want to prepare meals. If I'm not well, I wouldn't want to prepare meals,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
Yeah.
We don't know, but he will know. And it's between you and your patient to establish this together. That's the beauty of it, isn't it? It's not predictable because you have to factor in the human nature, you know, the values, the interest, and the personal causation. But if he says, I'm not preparing meals because I can't see and I really want to do it, then you can have that session. You can do the kitchen assessment. You can find out what's the difficulty, and then you can make recommendations. On which case, because you will be changing things, you're likely to adapt things.
Adapt things, yeah.
Then it becomes a modified intervention.
Modified intervention.
Because you cannot restore the impaired visual problem.
No.
Isn't it?
No.
So you can do cognitive retraining. You can teach them these are the techniques. You can put everything in one place. Or, you know,
color-coded as well.
He can color-code it. But I'm sure he would know his own house.
He will. He will know his own environment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So even the color-coding thing, because even in the dark, he knows where the kettle is.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
See, that's a very interesting perspective. But yes, explore that. But you can only address things.
He mentions.
If he identifies it to be a problem.
Okay, so for example, now, if he identifies he struggles with his personal care,
mm-hmm.
then struggles with looking at the time. Okay, struggles with personal care,
mm-hmm.
probably struggles with if this is person that likes going out
uh-huh.
and you know, leisure and enjoys leisure because according he plays on piano,
mm-hmm.
but he can't
mm-hmm.
due to his the ulcer on his like standing for too long.
Uh-huh.
So let's say that's what he likes to get back to, like get back to like doing his personal care,
mm.
get back to like doing his leisure, like things he enjoyed doing before.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I think with the ADL, I know how I'm gonna do that, like support him. We can do like assessments in the hospital
mm-hmm.
before he goes back home. But in terms of leisure, I'm like, to be honest, I don't know what to do with that. I don't even lie to you.
I think, and I mean, if somebody has a problem, the problem here is the context. Yeah, he's not engaging on leisure activities because a lot of things are happening with him. Yeah. The ulcer on the legs should not stop him from playing the piano.
Yeah, but he goes to the... How is he going to get there?
He doesn't have the...
In the house.
I thought he has a...
No, okay. He goes to somewhere. Somewhere to play that. So I'm like, if he's struggling with mobility and he uses rollator frame, how will he get back doing that?
How?
Yeah.
It's a long distance, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a long distance. It can get on a taxi.
Oh, is it? Is it that far that you need to take a car?
Yeah.
Another option is if you have problems with functional mobility, and this is outdoor.
Yeah.
Why not have an electric scooter?
Hmm.
You know, like a mobility scooter.
Mobility scooter. That's true.
Isn't it?
I didn't think
about that. You didn't think about that? Oh, okay. Well, that's a compensatory strategy. So the problem is what? Now, you've identified the problem, yeah? So the problem is, I want to be able to play the piano. Why can you not play the piano? Because I can't walk there. Why can you not walk there? It's too far and my legs could not tolerate it. Okay, but you want to do it. How are you going to do it? Am I going to teach you to walk that far? I could try, but it's not going to work. So what's the best way on how to do this now? Let's get a mobility scooter. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And what treatment would that be?
Compensatory.
Modify intervention. Yes, compensatory or mod ramps on the ramps.
Yeah.
Restore? Nope. Alter? Nope.
No, modify? Yes.
And now you would do that. But if you're in the hospital, can you provide him with electric scooter?
No.
How's he gonna get that?
There's something downstairs. There's a piano downstairs. So he can use a wheelchair.
Yeah. Well, we're not talking about community, is it?
No, we are talking about, I think this compensatory thing will be goes when he goes home.
To home, yeah.
Yeah, but goes for now.
Okay.
In the hospital. This one, the compensatory thing is going to be long-term goals. It's going to be under.
Okay.
But the short-term goals in the hospital now.
But the hospital is such a short term that really it's almost out of the equation. But yes, maybe if you want to do this now, yes, we can do that. But if a person needed to be at home in the community to be able to move around, you may have to refer the person to wheelchair services or community services for assessment and issuance of
mobility
scooter. Yeah, that's one where the funding is coming from social services.
Yeah.
And that would have been a supportive intervention. Or equally, you can just advise him to buy his own mobility scooter.
Yeah. So OT community can make that referral to social services.
You can make, if you're in the hospital.
I can do it.
You can make that.
That would be supportive intervention.
Supportive if you're doing it from here.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing it from the hospital.
It would be supportive.
Because all you're doing is you're making that referral. It just meant that you're enhancing the circumstance upon which he can do what he needed to do.
And then one thing I think I can do as well, which is going to be on long-term goals, because... When you think someone that used to be a bus driver,
uh-huh.
but it can't at the moment due to what is going on with him, due to mobility. So I think I can make social services can deal with that in terms mm-hmm. of finances as well. But in terms of him going back to work, I can recommend if they can actually make him do like administrative work.
That's one. But that is if you are working in the community.
But I can refer to community OT to do that on his behalf to recommend if you can do like administrative work for now.
Yeah.
Pending the time is physically
that's fine.
Fit.
Yeah. But that's what's happening is if you're in the hospital, like I said, where are you starting with? So you're in the hospital. You will make that referral to the community therapists.
Mm-hmm.
That intervention is supportive intervention for vocational rehab.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
And the ones that are doing the vocational rehab are the community teams. Yeah. Or maybe there's a vocational rehab team. Now, if you are in that team, in the community, then you will have to make that workplace assessment, you know? If I'm a I'm an OT in the vocational rehab. You make that referral. You're from the hospital.
Yeah, I
made
the referral.
You made the referral. So you've done a supportive intervention. I am now a therapist looking after. I've received this referral. I'll make an assessment. When he's home, I'll see him. What are you doing? You want to go back to doing the bus driving again?
Yeah.
I'll see him standing, walking, getting into the place. How are you able to do that? If he's able to do that, then that's fine. If it's not at all that it's possible for him because of the eyesight has
because
the eyesight has become a problem, then you will be unsafe to drive. I might recommend that you're not safe. I might even get the ophthalmologist or orthoptist to do that because it's not my call. It'd be a call of a doctor. Then now let's try and thinking about redeploying you into a
administrative work.
But even with that, with administrative work, you'll have to explore on bigger screen, bigger texts.
That's like adaptation.
Adaptation. But the game is different.
It's different.
Because I am now coming, thinking about vocational rehab, and this is now in the community.
In the community. So we make the referral to the community.
Yeah, for that, yeah.
That's like supportive intervention.
Supportive intervention.
So so mostly we're just going to be doing supportive, modifying.
Yeah. And so if you're here, you need to establish why. That psychosocial reason, values, the interest, and personal causation. If you have to speak to him and start to modify him, you know, I meant, to motivate him.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, you can do this. You can be empowering occupational therapist. Then that would be a, like, you know, you're addressing the values, the motivation, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you're providing that supportive intervention because that's a psychosocial support.
Yeah.
And you're using varying techniques, motivational interviewing, coaching, you know?
So do I need to, with this kind of person, I'm just referring, so the kind of assessment, yeah, but do I need to do like a cognitive assessment if he's been depressed to know?
Well, if you want to check if there's something wrong, there's nothing wrong doing a checking. Because one, I wouldn't think that there is a problem, but because again, it's not dementia, it's not something. And if you have, depending on the episode, if it's a high blood sugar or low blood sugar, but this is just episodic. Very, very small time where you would have that very high sugar level or very low sugar level, which, you know, it would make you confused, definitely. But once that's managed medically by tablets, then the sugar is controlled, then you shouldn't be confused anymore.
Okay.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know the nature of diabetes or what's happening?
This person has got type 2.
Okay.
He's got type 2 diabetes.
So let me, because I haven't spoken about this for a long time, but good for you to understand. It's all about sugar.
Yeah, it's all about sugar.
Yeah. And sugar is what we need to actually have the energy. Yeah. And the smallest form of sugar is glucose.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Our cells need glucose to be able to produce energy, you know. So, like, you know, glycolytic, you know, like glycolysis, and then you will produce energy. The thing is, these sugars can't go into the cells, you know, because it's too big. And it needs something. And what the body needs...
To break it down.
When you break it down, it becomes glucose. So, it's the smallest form. To get into the cells, you need insulin.
Oh, yeah.
So once there is insulin around the system, it will then get the sugar into the cells.
Okay.
So he's not diabetes. He's not insulin dependent. So no, if you have, there are, that's naturally produced. Insulin is naturally produced by our system, you know. But he's not short of insulin.
No.
So sugar is likely going to be in the, you know, it should be in the cells. But what happens to him is he's probably consuming a lot of sugar.
Yeah.
And then there is so much sugar floating around in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when the blood is filled with sugar? What happens if the water is filled with sugar?
Is it like the symptoms you get?
No, just the water, having so much sugar. What's going to happen to the water?
It's not...
It's going to be very thick.
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be very sticky.
Mm.
It's going to be hard. It's not going to be as fluid as the water.
Yeah, that's true.
And if the same, it's the same with the blood.
Mm-hmm.
If there's so much sugar in the blood, it's going to be thick.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's thick, it's going to put so much pressure on the walls.
Oh.
And then when there's so much pressure on the walls of the arteries, you have high blood pressure.
Oh.
And what happens is because it's thick, do you know the eyes, it's out, you know, you have very small arteries in the eyes.
Yeah, the vessels.
How is it going to flow in very small, in small arteries? It's going to be very difficult.
Oh, is that where the thing comes from?
And that's why you would have
blood.
Eye problem. Because the blood is not flowing,
it's not flowing through.
Through the blood vessels of the eyes, and it will affect your vision.
Oh.
Yeah. What happens to the genitals for men, and I guess for women too? There's not going to be a lot of blood flow in there,
mm-hmm.
and you need blood flow for erection.
Mm-hmm.
So because there's no blood flow freely, what's going to happen?
You're not going to have any sensation, feel anything.
Impotence.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going to happen. And if you have a high blood pressure, you have hypertension. Hypertension and high blood pressure are risk factors for stroke.
Mm.
So you can have a stroke, potentially, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if the blood is not flowing freely, you need the blood for healing and for wound healing. You know, all these platelets that are coming in. So if it's that and it's not healing properly, then your wound that's will not heal very quickly.
Yes,
isn't
that's
it?
True.
Okay. Yes. And so what else is happening there? If you have multiple wounds on the nerves, then your nerves are going to be affected. It's going to be painful. It's going to be sensitive or numb. It's neuropathy.
Mm.
So you can have diabetic neuropathy.
Neuropathy.
Yeah, neuropathic pain. So the main cause and the root cause of the problem is the sugar, and it needs to be controlled. So you can't, how are you going to control it?
If you don't want to control it by medication, you can control it by diet, isn't it?
Correct. So you can actually, this becomes health maintenance. In terms of ADLs, occupational therapy, you know, you can refer to dietitian. Yeah. And you can teach him or show him other services out there that is weight loss training program, dietitians, you know, something that he needs to be in control of the problem. You know? So that's the diabetes in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you can have two types, insulin dependent or non-insulin dependent. And he is a non-insulin dependent, which I would assume he eats a lot and he has a lot of sugar in his body. So I would assume that the physique is big.
Yeah.
Is this person big?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah,
so there you go. So there is so much sugar reserve out there. And then what happens? If the sugar is so much in the body, it will be stored in as lipids or fats. So he will build up the fat.
Build the fat. Oh, that's why they're obese.
That's why he become obesity. Mm. Wow. It's a beautiful story, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It's going to help me a lot.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, so there is a lot of things that you can do. But if you're working in the hospital, because your target is to move the person from hospital to home, all you'll do is, are you washing? Are you dressing? If you're not doing it, do you need help? If you need help, let's get carers to help you at home. That's what you're going to do. But there is still an ongoing problem. So you need to refer them to the right people.
Right people.
Now, the challenge sometimes is if the person is in the community, there's not enough service out there that can do this. So OTs don't have time to do this.
They don't have time, so they just refer.
They just refer to diabetic
nurse. So that's
nurse.
The supportive intervention.
Yeah, yeah.
I've learned a lot, thank you.
Is it nice?
It's nice.
It's a beautiful story,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and the functional thing that I'm struggling with is not as if when I got in there, I know what to say,
uh-huh.
But I think it's just the way of kind of, I don't want to be like, oh, can you, like, I want it to feel like more of having like a conversation.
Exactly. I think that's the root one, the therapeutic collaboration,
yeah.
Is what happens. It's the OT, you coming in, really having this heart-to-heart conversation,
yeah.
Excuse the pun, you know, if you're in a heart center, I don't know, heart-to-heart conversation with the person. How are you is the first question.
Sure.
What's wrong? How can we help? So you listen, okay? You're not thinking about treatment yet.
Treatment, yeah.
All you do is listen, you know, be an empty vessel, listen to the person. And once you do, then he'll tell you. And then you can probably think about ways because he probably doesn't know. He probably doesn't understand what's happening with the diabetes.
Yeah.
All he knows is that blood sugar is high. I'm hyperglycemic. I'm going to have tablets. But maybe for him to understand the story of sugar, maybe he'll understand and maybe it will create him to make some changes in his life.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
I think that's thank a good
you.
Session, is it?
Yeah, it is. Thank you. I really all enjoyed right. that.
And I really thank you for asking as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think with this and that we're doing this, a lot of people can potentially listen to it and learn from this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Until next time.
Next time. See you soon.
See you. Bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, talk to your friends and colleagues about it. Like it, subscribe, share, and do what you can to appease whatever algorithm that is at play. I am but your humble clinician, albeit with years of experience, I have very little understanding of this digital world. So if you have any questions or if you have topics that you want me to talk about, drop me an email. It's riot.conversations@gmail.com. Just remember, guys, anything you do matters and has an outcome. Until next time, bye.